Welcome to this special report. I'm Brendan Pollu. On the line with me right now was Dr. Julie Bettinger, who's a vaccine safety scientist at the Vaccine Evaluation Center in Vancouver. Dr. Bettinger, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
All right, well, first things first, Dr. Bettinger, with COVID-19 still going strong around the world, why is it more important now than it was maybe even 6 months ago to get either a suitable treatment or vaccine to help end this pandemic?
Well, I think as the continued case numbers have shown around the world, we're not going to be able to easily control or contain this virus without a vaccine.
Yeah. And I guess, why do you think there's maybe a hesitancy among parents and residents, not only across BC, but around the world, in getting a vaccine for the coronavirus? Is it because there's maybe so much angst amongst the public due to the pandemic, or are there maybe potentially other factors at play?
Well, I think, there was a recent survey that was done by Angus Reid that showed, I think it was about 50% of the population would accept a vaccine if one were available tomorrow, a safe and effective vaccine. I think that's a really important point to put in there. And so then you're really talking about, you know, that other group who may have some concerns or reservations. Some of them were unsure. Some of them wanted to wait and see. And I think a smaller proportion, it was about 10% in BC, said they wouldn't take a vaccine. It's hard to know in that survey, well, who are those people? Why are they saying that? You can't tell from the survey data. But I think in general, you know, what we find when we have a new vaccine is that people are always concerned about something that's new. They're concerned about the safety of the vaccine. They're concerned about whether or not it's been adequately tested. And I think it's not unusual to expect that these same concerns would be in place for a COVID vaccine or a new influenza vaccine. We see this consistently when we have new vaccines.
I guess maybe give us some of the reasons why the anti-vaxxer movement is growing in this pandemic and why there are maybe so many conspiracy theories around this pandemic. At the end of the day, does it simply come down to leadership?
Well, what sort of leadership do you mean?
I guess leadership from medical experts, leadership from government, that sort of thing.
So I think, you know, I'm not sure that it's fair to sort of characterize the anti-vaccine movement as growing during COVID-19. I think it was around before COVID-19, and certainly we're seeing rhetoric from those individuals during COVID-19. But I don't know that I've seen any studies to sort of indicate it's growing. But I think a lot of times when you talk about people who may be vaccine hesitant, I'm not talking about people who oppose all vaccines, but people who may be hesitant, they may have some trust issues with either the people in power or the medical system or healthcare providers. And so that's what's driving it for some people. I would need to see more evidence that, you know, that's kind of happening here in Canada.
Does it maybe shock you how two countries like Canada and the United States could be so polar opposite when it comes to their response to this virus?
Gosh, I don't know that I would say I'm shocked. I mean, I do think probably political leadership has something to do with certainly the response that we've seen south of the border. And in fact, somewhat the response we've seen north of the border here in Canada. So the political leadership that's in place in both countries is quite different.
There are suggestions that COVID-19 vaccines might become mandatory and that the only way to either enter a business or a sporting event in the future is to show proof that you have been vaccinated. Do you think this is realistic, or do you feel that's taking things a little bit too far?
Well, I think we're a long way away from mandatory vaccines for COVID-19. I mean, we first need to have a vaccine that works, which we don't have that yet. And then we need to have enough doses of that vaccine that we can offer it to everyone in the population. I mean, when we do hopefully get a COVID-19 vaccine, we're not immediately going to have enough doses to vaccinate everybody. So, you know, we're a long way from being at the point in time where we can say we have enough doses and we've made it easily available to everyone and people still aren't getting it, and so therefore we need to do something else. So I think any of those sorts of conversations are probably a bit premature.
And what do you think maybe more people are worried about, maybe a vaccine for this in particular compared to other vaccine requirements that are pretty commonplace, whether it's school-aged children, military personnel, or even hospital workers for that matter?
Well, I think, again, I think it's coming back to this idea that it's a new vaccine and people don't know anything about it. But I do feel like these conversations around mandatory vaccination are really, really premature. We first need to have a vaccine that we can use, and it needs to be available before we have these sorts of conversations. So I would encourage people not to be too worried about that at this point.
Other pandemics like SARS, H1N1, or Ebola that were very harmful didn't require a full shutdown of society or a mandatory vaccine around the world, even though we're a long way from that right now. And yet drastic measures were taken for COVID-19. In your medical opinion, what makes this virus more vicious or unique than maybe the other three that I just mentioned?
I guess I do want to clarify. I mean, I don't think there are mandatory vaccination requirements for COVID-19 anywhere in the world yet. So I don't think that's a measure that's been put in place anywhere that I'm aware of. But certainly, you know, society, there were a lot of measures that were put in place to somewhat contain the spread of the virus. And one of the reasons for that is it was a lot more contagious than, say, SARS. And a lot more deadly than influenza. And so the fact that you had a virus that could spread very easily and was actually killing people required some different measures to be able to control it.
Right now, to my knowledge, there are 150 potential COVID-19 vaccines being developed around the world. I guess take us through what is maybe going behind the scenes with these labs and the amount of pressure these medical experts are under to find that so-called magic bullet.
I'm a little bit concerned about the characterization that medical labs are being pressured to develop a vaccine. I don't think that's an accurate characterization at all. You know, there is a process that each vaccine has to go through before it's licensed. And, you know, the first step is showing that the vaccine works in non-human studies. And so some of the labs are still at that stage. When you've shown that it's safe in non-human studies and in a lab setting, then you move into phase 1 clinical trials. And the very first step of a phase 1 clinical trial is to evaluate the safety of the vaccine in humans. Once that's been established, then you move into phase 2 trials where you look at both safety and whether or not the vaccine works, efficacy. So if the vaccine passes stage 2 clinical trials or phase 2 clinical trials, then it moves into phase 3 clinical trials, which is in much, much larger samples. And in that, you're really looking at how well the vaccine works and you're also looking at safety. So it's not until a vaccine passes all of those steps that it would even be considered to be used in the broader population. And we're not there yet with any of those 150 vaccine candidates that you mentioned.
Yeah, I guess maybe pressure wasn't necessarily the right word, but there just seems to be a sense of urgency, at least for those reports, either in the media or just based on the contagiousness of this virus and the uncertainty around everything in society right now. There just seems to be a more of a sense of urgency to, you know, get this vaccine out and about, even though there are many steps, as you mentioned, before that time to get completed first. Do you kind of feel that there is more of a sense of urgency, or do you think that's all maybe publicly driven based on, you know, some people just panicking, maybe unnecessarily so far on this pandemic?
Well, so I think a sense of urgency is maybe the correct term, but I also think what's happened is there's been a real refocusing of the scientific research that is normally happening. So a lot of people that might have been working on different vaccine candidates, say for RSV or influenza or, you know, pick your infectious disease, they've switched from that work. They've essentially put that research on hold and are now looking at COVID-19 or SARS, the SARS-CoV-2 virus. So I think that's more what's happened in the fact that you have, like, you know, the best scientific minds in the world are now looking at this one research question. And it's pretty powerful, actually, when you get that sort of collaboration happening globally, you know, in terms of what can be done and what can be solved. I think, you know, we could actually learn a lot from what's happening right now with COVID-19 in terms of how we may be able to deal with some of our other health issues and health problems.
You may not be able to fully answer this question, but I'll ask it anyway. We're seeing hospitalizations in our province remain relatively flat over the past 5 or 6 weeks, give or take, along with more people being infected with COVID-19. Based on maybe the lack of hospitalizations we're seeing over the past month or so, do you feel that is it too early to maybe come to the conclusion that maybe the younger population has a better chance of fighting off this virus when compared to our most vulnerable because maybe their immune systems, give or take, are normally that much more stronger because they are younger in age compared to the ones that maybe are living in senior or long-term care homes where they're a lot more susceptible to be harmed a lot more by this virus?
Yeah, you know, I am probably not the best person to comment on that. I think, and I don't know that we know that enough to be able to make that sort of a conclusion. But again, I'm not as familiar with those data, so probably wouldn't be the best person to ask that question.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think is a realistic timeline for a vaccine, and how long do you think it will take for it to become effective?
Oh, gosh. So if I had the answer to that...
Really putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. No, honestly, I would be guessing if I were to sort of have, and that would all it would be to hazard a guess on that. I've seen all sorts of estimates put out there. You know, I think we're just going to have to monitor how all of those vaccine candidates kind of move through the stages of development and see what happens. I don't expect that all 150 will make it through all three phases of study. So, I think as things move along, we'll have a better sense of when we might have a vaccine available. But I don't want to make a prediction.
Is it possible, Dr. Bettinger, that we could have more than one vaccine that could work?
Oh, I think that's definitely possible. Yes. I guess I will make a prediction on that one. I think given the numbers of candidates that are being looked at right now, I think it's highly possible that we'll have more than one, and we may actually, you know, at the end of this have a choice.
Yeah. How do you kind of oversee things in terms of seeing countries like Russia proclaiming that they have a vaccine already for this virus, and they've tested it on a certain number of the population and are rolling it out, even though maybe they may have skipped a few steps along the way, at least that's what maybe some people are suggesting. How dangerous is it for countries like that that are trying to get the pandemic done and over with, or at least under a lot more control than maybe what it was previously, to, you know, get a vaccine rolled out and thus kind of maybe introducing one a bit sooner than they should?
Yeah, that's a hard question for me to answer because I'm not... I don't have access to the sorts of testing and clinical trial data that they've used for the vaccine in, say, Russia. So I can't really evaluate, you know, did they skip a step? Did they not? But I guess, you know, what I would say in general is that we do have really clear criteria that we use to evaluate our vaccines. And, you know, I would be worried of any jurisdiction that wasn't actually following the you know, phase one, phase two, phase three trial criteria that we have, and also of any sort of regulator at a country level that wouldn't be expecting that to occur.
Yeah. My last question for you, Dr. Bettinger, in what ways has your life or job changed since this pandemic began?
Well, I think as every other Canadian out there, completely. As everyone else, I'm working remotely. I'm practicing social distancing, wearing a mask when I go out. My kids have been learning at home. I think every Canadian has been touched by this, and I'm no exception to that.
Do you think we could see mandatory masks at some point in BC? I know that I've spoken to Bonnie Henry on a couple of occasions, and she's very hesitant to implement that.
Well, so I think I would listen to what she's saying on that. I certainly don't have any inside track on whether or not we would be wearing mandatory masks. And if she's saying she's hesitant to do it, I would believe her.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time on this, Dr. Bettinger, and good luck with everything in the future.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.